Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. Been a bit of a gap in the production schedule for the last 3 weeks. Just been incredibly focused with work, and it has required all my energies. I've had a couple of big projects that I needed to really dig deep into. And I don't want to give you guys crappy work, so I'd rather not do a show if I'm not focused on it. So we've got a cool show coming up with Cyril Debatte, who's one of France's premier mixed martial arts competitors and coaches. He's got a successful team called Snake Team that he coaches now, and he also competed a lot in UFC, K1, and a bunch of different organizations. He's got a really, really good pedigree when it comes to MMA, and definitely an authority on the subject. So I think you guys are going to get a lot out of what he has to say. Also, wanted to remind you guys about our sponsors. As always, the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood store is offering 10% off everything in the store to those of you who use the coupon code PODCAST at checkout. We've just released what I believe is the sickest rash guard and spats combination on the market. It's called the Musashi range. My business partner surprised me with this earlier in the year. He received his black belt, and as a token of his appreciation, he knows I'm a fan of the Japanese swordsman Miyamoto Musashi, so he wanted to make something for me with that theme. He surprised me with this, and I just absolutely fell in love with the design. So I thought it was so great, I wanted to bring it out to the wider world, and we've put it up on the store and just launched it. Please go check it out. Remember, you can get 10% off with the coupon code PODCAST. And as always, Truth Naturals, who make some of the best CBD products on the market, are also a sponsor of the show. For those of you who haven't yet tried CBD, you're missing out. It really does help with relaxing the body and decreasing the inflammation that hard jiu-jitsu training can cause. It helps you get back on the mat sooner. It's very powerful, and definitely worth trying out if you haven't tried it out. Head on over to truthnaturals.co.uk and use the coupon code JJBTruth, and you'll get a good discount on all of their products. Okay, guys, let's dive into episode 18 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. Hey, guys, welcome to Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, episode 18. I'm here with a badass mofo, a friend of mine I haven't seen in person for many years. His name is Cyril Debatte, and he is, amongst other things, an accomplished veteran of K1 and UFC, a lifelong martial artist, and just generally an interesting guy. Cyril, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, but so you're in France at the moment, is that right?
Yeah, just outside of Paris, in Rueil-Malmaison, where I live.
Okay. And it's my understanding that at the moment, if you could just give everyone a little bit of a background of specifically your martial arts career. You were originally a kickboxer, is that correct?
Yeah, I started I started fighting in 1991 with kickboxing, Muay Thai, and French savate.
Okay.
And I was lucky to have a first trainer who was very open-minded towards martial arts, and he introduced me to he's the one that showed me a first armbar.
Oh, really?
And that was back in the mid 90s, because he was discovered the UFC, like the first UFC show.
Okay, that's cool. You mentioned you trained in Savate, and I'm not even going to pretend to say I have had an experience with it, but I think I have a basic idea of what it is. But for the listeners who aren't familiar with Savate, could you tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah, it's a sport that came from an ancient French kickboxing style. Okay. Called le chausson parisien. It was kickboxing basically with for noble people that would fight in duels. Mm-hmm. They would use their fists and their and their kicks, even knees back then, and it developed into a kickboxing style called savate. So you're dressed, you're not in shorts, you're dressed, you have a leotard and fighting shoes, and it's pretty deadly. It's a very those that have practiced savate know how deadly it is. They concentrate on combinations and movement. So it's not as static as Muay Thai. You're not standing in that one spot and delivering power shots. You've got more boxing kind movements actually when it comes to footwork.
Interesting. I mean, that stuff about the French nobility using it for dueling is fascinating. I had no idea that that's where it came from. Now, if I'm not mistaken, there was a guy in UFC 1, a French guy who was a savate practitioner. Is that right?
The only French guy that was fighting back in those days, he was originally from Holland. It was Orlando Viet. He was a Thai boxer. I don't recollect the French savate guy from the early UFCs.
Okay. I must be mistaken. So if you could just tell us, so you started training, you were exposed to all these awesome striking arts, and then you made a decision that you wanted to be a professional. How did it go from there?
To cut a long story short, I had a pretty rough childhood. My mother passed away pretty early, and I was full of anger. I was full of, you know, negative things to express. So I definitely felt attracted to martial arts and combat sports just to let it all out, I suppose. And so when I was 18, I was allowed, finally my grandmother allowed me to sign up to a kickboxing club, a savate club that was next to me, and I started straight away. I wanted to fight. I wasn't interested in just training. I wanted to compete. So I started competing straight away. Actually, I had my first fight within 4 months of signing up, and then it just went from there. I straight away I wanted to become my goal was to become a world champ. I didn't want to be national or a European champ. I wanted to be world champ straight away.
Wow. And it's my understanding that you actually did become a world champ. You won a K1 title. Is that correct?
I was I fought in a number of different styles, and I was 4 times world champion in various styles. The first one being and not even a style I actually practiced. It was a karate style called Shotokan, which was a bare knuckle, full contact karate style. And then I became world champion in Thai boxing and different other combat styles.
Wow. So when you say world champion in Thai boxing, is like under what organization was that?
Yeah, it was under WKA. Which was pretty big at the time. This was the late 90s, and WKA was one of the major leagues.
And this was, it was like based in Europe, or was it based in Thailand, or?
No, WKA was a world organization. It was the biggest kickboxing / Muay Thai organization at the time. Of course, the Thai people had the most recognized leagues for little weights. Unfortunately, they didn't have any fighters my weight. It stopped at pretty light, actually. It was like around 75 kilos. After that, there were no more Thai people involved in Thai boxing. So anything above 75 kilos was all European, basically.
Wow. So, I mean, I love the story. I love that about how, like, you had this anger inside you and you wanted to express it, and you channeled it into martial arts, and you had this goal of becoming a world champion, and you achieved it. I think that is really, really awesome. So can you tell us how you transitioned from being a predominantly strike-based martial artist into, you started doing MMA and you competed in the UFC? Can you tell us what that was like and how it manifested?
Well, Going back to when I started in 1991, as I said, I was lucky enough to have my first trainer who was very open-minded to combat sports and martial arts. He came from himself a savate background, but he also taught kickboxing and then later on Muay Thai. So he was very, very open-minded to martial arts. And in the early 90s, he gave me a video cassette that was a bootleg. Actually, it was in a, we didn't have the same norms as the USA, so I had to watch it in black and white. But he gave me the first tournament, the first UFC tournament that I watched, and I was fascinated by this new style that I had no idea existed. You know, this style of fighting. You see that in movies and everything, and you fantasize about it a lot, but I never actually saw the real thing. So to see the first UFC tournament like that, I was completely, yeah, fascinated. I had no idea. So the first thing that comes to mind is, wow, this is violent. This is barbaric. This is this, and it's pretty negative. But as a martial artist, as a competitor, you are also fascinated by the fact that you see yourself competing in an event like that. I was a competitor. I love the challenge. So to see people from different various martial arts, combat sports, compete against one another in a caged environment. I mean, it was crazy for me. So it kind of stuck in the back of my mind, and I think in the mid when it was 1996, there was a big tournament, Pancras tournament, that was held in France. No striking on the ground, but it was still pretty much. It looked like MMA. It looked like no holds barred back in the. So it was Muay Thai, judo, wrestling, and then grappling on the ground, and that it was a pretty big event. They had like foreign guys come in from all over the world, you know, Japan, Eastern European, of course. And so I enlisted. I was pretty excited about that. There was only one weight for me, which was heavyweight, open weight. So if you were above 80 kilos, it was an open weight tournament. So I did that, and I won it. So it was kind of a calling for me after that. I just wanted to compete in MMA, and so I continued competing in both. Actually, I still competed in stand up, and beginning of the year 2000, I started competing in MMA with the full rules.
Wow, that's cool. And so when you said you began competing at MMA with the full rules, that was in things like Cage Rage and smaller shows in England.
Yeah, it was the first one was called Cage Wars. The cage was really, really small. It was not good for a striker, and I faced a guy that was a lot heavier than me, and I was a wrestler, so I was taken down pretty early. I didn't have much of a wrestling. I didn't have much of wrestling back then, so he took me down most of the fight, and I started working from the guard, and I tried to submit him a couple of times. It was a pretty even though I spent most of the time on my back, I was delivering punches and elbows from the bottom and going for submission. So it was pretty. It was pretty game fight, but I lost on points. So I was pretty frustrated with that, and that really pushed me to start, you know, training a lot more on my wrestling and BJJ.
That's cool. So I guess where I'm going with this is, I'm very interested to hear specifically how it came to be that you got called up to fight in the UFC.
But it took a lot of time. I think. The fact that I was competing in both sports, both styles, and that I even if I couldn't get signed to the UFC straight away. I still had a career in stand-up, so that's why I didn't I wasn't forcing like the UFC thing straight away. I took me some time to sign up with a good manager as well. So I was competing in different organizations all around the world, stand up and MMA. And then I think the fact that I fought against Shogun on a 2 weeks 2 weeks notice kind of accelerated my MMA career. I did a fight in Pride against Shogun with a 2 weeks notice, and I held my own on the stand up. I actually dominated him on stand up. Him being this very scary MMA legend at the time that was knocking people out and was very aggressive on his feet. Early in the fight, he took me down because I was overwhelming him in the stand-up department. So it kind of opened people's eyes on me and my skills and everything. So it was easier then to get signed to American on the American scene, you know, MMA scene. So I got signed to Elite XC. After that, a couple of years after that, and then Elite XC went down, and then my manager was actively trying to get me signed to the UFC, but Joe Silva, the matchmaker at the time, didn't think much of me, and it was my manager's just going back and forth every day with Joe Silva trying to get me signed. So eventually he signs me in 2010, but I was already. By that time, I was already 37, so that was the end of my career, basically. So I got signed to the UFC when it was really time to hang up the gloves.
Yeah, interesting. But you still pushed through with it, and it's my understanding you had a decent record in the UFC. You were tied wins and losses. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. I fought against Luis Kane, who was a big name at the time in the light heavyweight division. Mm-hmm. He's ranked number 10 in the UFC. And Joe Silva gave me Luis Kane as an opponent straight away. I think he wanted me to get knocked out so he could get rid of me without even having me having a career in the UFC. So. I knocked Luis Kane out in two and a half minutes. And I was looking forward to having a nice UFC career because I was at the end of my career. I'd just beaten the number 10 guy in the world. So I thought from then I was going to be given, some fighters in the top 10 division, in the top 10 rankings. And Silva had another. He kept me around like a gatekeeper, and I realized that pretty early on in my UFC career. So it kind of, my motivation went out the window after that. So my second opponent was Gustafsson, who was completely unknown and super dangerous. And I knew it straight away. I knew it was it wasn't a very good draw for me. I had nothing to gain winning against Gustafsson, and he was dangerous enough to pose a threat. So I was completely unmotivated, and it showed, and I lost. And it was, my career in the UFC was just up and down, fighting to get my motivation back every time.
Yeah, I mean that's a tough draw, especially like. You had the skill, I'm sure, and you've been fighting your whole life, and then you make it to the pinnacle, and then the problem is that to really become one of the top stars in something like the UFC, you need to have everything working for you. It's a combination of age, luck, skill, there's all these variables, and if one of them is out, it's just not going to happen. The competition is too fierce, and it sounds like that's what happened to you. Is it just didn't all line up?
Yeah, I think the most important aspect of a UFC fighter has got to be his mind. If his mind isn't 100% where it should be, then sooner or later it's gonna show. You're gonna stumble across someone that has a steady mind, has a strong mind, knows what he wants, and is completely determined to come out, you know, triumphant. So for me to be in that position at 37, 38, where I'm unmotivated against these young dogs that are, you know, that are fighting for their existence, you know, their future, it was really hard. Mm-hmm. It was really hard.
Yeah, I can imagine, Cyril. I can imagine. Now, you spoke about this strong mind, and I have a few questions on that. The first is, do you think that is something that can be trained, or you have to be born with it?
I think it's a bit of both. I think that, of course, people that have got strong character, strong spirit, have an easier time making it to the big leagues. Of course, that's true. But I also think that to a certain extent, you can train your mind. I think life trains your mind. You know, if you have an easy life, if you have like without any obstacles in your life, then it's hard to get that strong spirit. But for example, for me, I believe that to a certain extent, it was my personality straight from the beginning, but also life trained me to endure and be stronger in my mind. So then when I used that in combat sports, it was easier. I could endure more. I could train harder. I could be more determined than a regular dude, you know. So it's a bit of both. I think you can like I have some of my fighters that I train are very skilled. They're very talented. They naturally get technique. They naturally have something for like distance and timing, and so it's naturally that they're you know, they're talented, but they don't really have to work that hard. And I tell them all the time, you know, you have a hard time because now you've got to focus on the hardest part of your training, and that's mentally. You've got to become a stronger. You have to have a stronger mind, a strong spirit. Mm-hmm. In order to use that talent efficiently, and that's the hard part.
Mm. Sometimes I'll be training. Like recently, I was teaching a jiu-jitsu class, and I was sparring with one of the young guys. He's like a blue belt, very very raw. Doesn't have much technique, but man, it was one of the toughest roles I've had in weeks and weeks. And what I realized is that the reason he was so difficult to train with is because of his mind. He's just like, I always think of the idea of, or the image of an ocean, right? Which the ocean will just keep coming, dude. Doesn't matter how long it takes, but the waves will just keep breaking against the shore until it's ground into sand. And it was kind of like that training with him. I don't know where it comes from, and I don't really know how to teach it to people. For me, some guys just have it and some guys don't. You know, Cyril, I wanted to mention another story. Well, it's one of my prime memories of you is when I first got to know you. I think it was probably the first time I met you. It was many years ago. You fought Michael Bisping in a, I think it was a K-1 rules match, if I'm not mistaken. It was definitely a stand-up or striking only match. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Completely. Yeah. And man, I'll never forget, because this was before Bisping had become... it was before he'd been on The Ultimate Fighter and he became a real MMA fighter. He was like a very journeyman style kickboxer. Like he wasn't great. And I remember you just took the guy apart. And my defining memory of it is how from the beginning, from the press conference through the match and to the end, you were a professional and he was an amateur. Like he was just this dude who was pitching up. And I found that very, very, very interesting. And I think Bisping somehow, I think on The Ultimate Fighter, he dug deep and he kind of like, he learned, or he got that thing that I'm talking about, that like, that strong mind. I don't think he always had it. I think he was, he had to earn it, which I find quite interesting.
I think
you have to.
I kind of disagree with you. I think that what set Bisping apart has always been with him. I think that if he was when I faced him in that K1 kickboxing fight, he was already he had like I think two world titles, uh-huh. Kind of world titles in kickboxing. It wasn't a real world title, but what I'm saying is he had a decent up until then he had a decent kickboxing career and an MMA career because he was undefeated in MMA back then. Just because of his mind, I think, like you said, he didn't have much skill. Mm-hmm. He was definitely pushing forward all the time. He was getting punished and still coming, you know, still resilient, still determined to win the fight. And I think that shows on his career. I think he's not the guy with the most wins in the UFC for nothing. I think he just, you know, he was an average fighter for most of his career, and just being determined like he was, he got better and better. And towards the end of his, well, now he's a good fighter. I think most of the people underrate him because they saw him being this raw MMA fighter for such a long time, but he's improved so much during those 10 years where he's been in the UFC. Now he's got a very, very good takedown defense, decent wrestling. He's above average in striking. He doesn't get put on his back much. So I definitely rate him as one of the best in that division in the world, even though 10 years ago he was, you know, a crappy fighter.
Yeah, well, okay, I stand corrected. And this, it's cool that you corrected me, because I was just thinking the other day, I was in the changing room at the academy where I've been training, and, you know, like, we just finished training, we're all discussing it was Saturday, we were discussing the upcoming UFC, which was Bisping versus GSP. Yeah. And, you know, all of us had an opinion. And I just was thinking to myself,
yeah,
okay, look, you know, a few of us, our opinions can be taken a little bit more seriously than the average dude on the street when it comes to something like the UFC or MMA. Mm. Maybe mine even a little bit more than the other guys, because I'm an instructor and I've coached a few guys. But still, I mean, we don't know shit. That was the overwhelming understanding that I came to. And it's cool to talk to someone like you, because you've been on both sides of the coin. You know, you've been a fighter and you fought at the very, very highest level, but you're also a coach who has coached fighters who've also reached that pinnacle. And so I think someone like you, when you speak about things like MMA, I'm going to listen. And I wanted to know what your thoughts are on the current state of MMA and the UFC in particular, and where you see it going.
Well, I think that, well, it's pretty obvious that the skill level has never been that high. Today, the fighters in the UFC are so skilled. And if you just backtrack 5 years ago, the skill level, the overall skill level wasn't as high as today.
Mm-hmm.
Physical level as well. I mean, guys are training better. Of course, there's more and more chemicals involved, which is like the bad side. There's always a bad side to everything, but in the UFC, it's definitely that for me is the use of performance enhancing drugs that is a plague for professional MMA. So
you have no doubt that that is taking place.
Oh yeah, of course it's from my personal experience. Personally, I pride myself in saying that I've never, ever touched anything throughout my whole career, whether in standing, stand-up or MMA. I've never, never touched anything. Of course, that's my word. But the number of people I've seen behind the scenes, guys that I've trained with, guys that I've fought, that are on the good stuff, it's crazy. I want to say, and my this is coming also from one of the biggest managers, MMA managers, agents that I've worked with, saying that in like the top 10 of each division in the UFC, there must be at least 75% using PEDs.
Wow.
So I really think that's the case today.
Yeah, I mean, I have so much to say on this. The first thing is that I think you were maybe heading there before I interrupted you with the question on the PEDs, but I think largely, and tell me if I'm incorrect, Cyril, largely today with MMA, okay, sure, you need to be incredibly skilled, but it's also one of the variables is how much punishment the fighter can take. And I don't just mean punishment in the ring. I mean like punishment he can endure in training. And, you know, whether people want to believe it or not, the guys who take this stuff, it works, dude. It works. And they're all taking it. But, like, a lot of people still want to, it's weird. They hold on. They want to see the best fights. They want to see the guys with the best physiques, with the most explosive technique. But then they freak out when.
I want to disagree with you. I want to disagree with you again on that point. I think that the punishment. Is not the punishment for me 95% of the time, 99% of the time, it's just the willpower of the fighter. I mean, I've fought against a very tough English dude in an early MMA fight in England in 2003, I think, which was for a title in that organization. But I fought him, and early in the round, one of the first punches I threw, I broke my hand on his head, on his forehead. Mm-hmm. And after that, I just had like three more rounds to continue, and I still use my broken hand to punch him with. And I'd say halfway through the fight, I was in so much pain that I couldn't feel my forearm anymore, just because of the adrenaline and everything that was just being pumped into my body, just to make sure I could you know go on with the fight. So after the fight, I go straight to my locker room and I start feeling dizzy straight away and sick and everything. And I tell my trainers, I say, dude, you know, I think I've broken my hand, and I think it's pretty bad. Call a doctor. The doctor comes into the locker room. I still had my gloves on because I couldn't take them off from my hand. And he comes in, and the doctor comes in, and he's like, "So what's your problem?" And I said, "I've got a broken hand." And I show him my hand, and he's very confident. He said, "No, let me tell you what you have. Like, you know, I'm the doctor around here." And he grabs hold of my hand, like it's got nothing, and I nearly fainted. Like, and he starts tugging on my fucking, you know, glove, and I say, "Dude, you know, be careful. My hand is broken." And he takes my glove off. Of course, there's a weird looking angle to my bone, the bone in my hand. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Oh yeah, it's broken." And I say, "Yeah, of course it's broken." And I nearly fainted. I started, you know, puking and everything because of the pain. Just to say that in that fight, I could continue use my hand. I could punch with it, even though it was badly broken. And it's just to show that in a fight, you've got so much going on inside your body, with adrenaline, with the hormones, with the different chemicals your body's making, that you're not invincible, but pain is not an issue, you know, apart from like various different pains, like a liver shot, for example, or a shot to the solar plexus. There's nothing can really stop you, and certainly not a broken bone. It's just your body's an amazing machine. It can go through experiences that if you're not in a fight, if I have half of what I endured during that fight at home, I would have fainted. I would have passed out. I would have, you know, your body is conditioned. Your body is used to to a certain level of pain. Anything above that, and your, you know, your brain just shuts off. But in a fight, you are conditioned, mentally conditioned and physically conditioned as well. And you've got all these chemicals going through your body. So I don't think, coming back to PEDs, I don't think the ability to endure punishment in a fight has got anything to do with PEDs. I think it's got to do with your mindset, your mental conditioning, and the chemicals that you have, the natural chemicals you have going through your body. The difference is made during training. The PEDs are used essentially to be good in training for longer, so you get better. If you can train twice as much or three times more than a regular athlete during your training camp, you're going to be a lot better. You're going to be stronger. You're going to be faster. Of course, there's chemicals that actually enhance that as well. So you are stronger. You are faster. But the fact that you can train harder for longer periods makes you a better fighter.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very, very well-reasoned argument, and I do see your point, Cyril. So, man, I wanted to get into slightly more philosophical questions, because I know you're a guy who thinks very deeply. So I'm reading a book on creativity, or how to think creatively, and this guy was saying how very often, he was basically making the point that you should try not to be an expert in anything. You should try not to define yourself as an expert, because an expert very often speaks about his years of experience. He'll say, you know, I'm an expert in jiu-jitsu, I've been training for 20 years. But the fact is, you only really learned in the first couple of years, and then you repeated what you learned for the next 10 or 15.
Yeah.
And that really, really stuck with me. And I thought, when I was contemplating on the questions I was going to ask you, you know, they often speak about the beginner's mind and how to approach things without your preconceptions, and that's the way to learn the most quickly. That's something I'm really trying to do with my approach to jiu-jitsu and life in general. But I just wondered for you, especially now that you're a full-time coach, is this something that's on your mind? Is this something you try to adopt as well?
Would you mean for me or for my students, or?
Well, I guess you would have to do it for yourself to be able to teach it to your students.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, true. I think that mixed martial arts, more than any other sport that I've encountered, proves to you on a regular basis, on a daily basis, that you're a beginner from start to finish. You'll never be an expert of anything, because there's so many different styles involved in MMA that you can't be an expert of MMA. You can only be a beginner of MMA to, you know, mm-hmm. and you're to be a beginner all your life. Like, for example, the best example I can think of is GSP. Mm-hmm. GSP is probably one of the, if not the best, mixed martial artists in history. And why is he the best? Because he understands he's a beginner. He understands he's only scratched the surface. I know GSP pretty well. If I go to his gym, he will come to me and he will pick my mind. He will ask me, how do I do the clinch, the tie clinch? How do I put my hands in the such and such position? Mm-hmm. How do I make my knees more efficient? And he will pick my mind, because he understands that in that domain, in that area, I have more expertise than he does. Mm-hmm. And he's a very humble guy. I think that also has to do with being a good martial artist. If you are humble enough to say, I'm a beginner, I need to know shit. I need to learn from this guy, because he's got a better guard or a better sweep or whatever, or a better punch or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Then you are open to development, and you are open to becoming a better fighter. Mm-hmm. And I read that in the mixed martial arts, that's generally the idea. That's generally what people have in mind, because there's so many different styles. Again, you any one of those top guys that I've met that come to me, and they will recognize me for my stand-up abilities and my striking. They humble themselves. They will come to me and they say, okay, even though in MMA they have a better credentials and better career and everything, they'll come to me and they say, okay, show me this, show me that, because they understand that you're always a beginner. There's always shit to be learned from different people. And I think that more in MMA, people understand that. So I've never really had I've never really come across a top MMA guy that says, you know, I know everything. I'm an expert. I'm this, I'm that. Even the top guys, the top champs, recognize that you're always learning in MMA. Mm-hmm.
Would you say you've never come across an MMA guy that doesn't adopt that attitude? Does that mean you have found strikers or top Muay Thai or top kickboxer guys that aren't like that, who think they know everything and have stopped learning and stopped growing?
I've come across even BJJ guys, even, you know, wrestlers, even the fact is that when you're in one discipline that is limited in terms of what you're allowed to do and the techniques and everything, and even though there's probably hundreds of different techniques, the fact that they are excellent at that style and that they are, you know, world champs and everything, and they completely dominate that style and that particular area, they are persuaded, they think that they know everything that is to be known to of that style, which is completely untrue. They dominate their opponents in such a fashion that, you know, there's no competition. They think that they know everything there is to be known to of that style. Mm-hmm. But MMA, you can't do that. You cannot have that mentality, because it's simply not true. You can, if I go to another MMA gym and I wrestle with someone, he's gonna take me down. You know, if he's a better wrestler than me, he's gonna take me down, even though he might not be as good as an MMA fighter. But if he's a good wrestler, he's a better wrestler than me, he's gonna take me down. Same thing with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Same thing with the striking. If he's a better striker. So on and so on. So because there's so many different things that come into play with being an MMA fighter, you can't really have that mentality where you're saying, I know everything. Whereas when you're a kickboxer, it's not the same thing. When you're a wrestler, it's not the same thing. When a BJJ guy, it's not the same thing.
Yeah, I guess it's similar to life. Like when you find people who are highly specialized in their fields. Like I notice it happens a lot with doctors and lawyers.
Oh yeah.
You know, they're very smart people, and they're extremely specialized. And then they think they know everything, yeah, you know, about life. Yeah. And I always think of it as a closed system versus an open system. And once you become a closed system, I think just your general quality as a human being degrades very, very quickly. Okay, Cyril, so here's the next question. And it's been on my mind for about 24 hours how to phrase this to you without offending you.
Just throw it out.
Throw it out. So I was introduced, for the listeners out there, I was introduced to Cyril by a mutual friend of mine, of ours, called Anthony, who's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. Very, very cool guy. And he made this comment to me once. He said that, and this was many years ago, Cyril, so please take it in context. He said that you defined a man by his ability to fight, and that was your measure of a man. And it really struck a chord with me when he said this to me, because for me, I was at the stage in my life where I defined a man by his ability to do jiu-jitsu. So, I mean, this guy could be a total fucking scumbag, but if he was a black belt in jiu-jitsu and had won like some medals, I'd be like, wow, this guy's amazing, right? Like, he's the kind of person I want to be. And the journey that life took me on made me realize that, there's many, many more ways to define a human being, and some of them are actually better than his ability to fight. And now you've just had a couple of kids in the past couple of years and past few years, and I wanted to know, like, is what Anthony said true? Back in the day, did you think that way? And I guess now, how has your view changed?
I think that part of that statement is true. I think that if you're a fighter, then yes, it defines you as a man. If you're already a fighter, your ability to fight the pretty much defines you as a man, because when you see someone in a cage or a ring or whatever it is, whatever style, and you see that guy fighting, you kind of, if you've been around the game a long time and you've coached people and you understand, you try and understand the human mind, you can see to a certain extent where that guy comes from, what he's made of. And like for someone, for example, for example, like we were talking about Bisping, I can understand seeing his fights, seeing his career, I can understand where he comes from. He's determined. He's this tough dude that pushes forward and goes against adversity, and is pretty brute. Even his personality is pretty brute. He's not subtle. But he pushes forward, and he's determined, and I think he's pretty honest. So if you're a fighter, yes, I if you're a fighter, then it's watching you fight. For me, tells me a lot about who you are. But if you're not a fighter, then no, I don't think, I don't think it, you know, it, you don't, you're not defined by your ability to fight. I think combat sports and martial arts are just a very small aspect of my life, for example. I think they've helped me become who I am today. But I also believe that life has done a lot more to make me who I am today. So in that sense, if you're talking about fighting in general, then and you can relate to life being a fight, then yeah, it de definitely defines a man. If you're used to, you know, pushing forward and going after things and chasing your dreams and everything, and that's your fight, then it defines you as a man, definitely. But other than that, if it's we're talking about combat sports now, you know, the
Life in general, yeah.
life in general, if like you take a dude from wherever he is and put him in a street fight, and then I see the result, and I say, okay, he's this and that. No, I it's not that simple.
Yeah, fair enough, man. Now I'm happy to hear that you have that view, man. Cyril, it's been really great chatting to you. If the listeners want to find out more about you and your team. By the way, Cyril's got a up and coming, I wouldn't say up and coming, I'd say an established and fast rising MMA team called Snake Team. Where can they go to learn more about you and Snake Team and the fighters that you train?
There's a lot of things on social media, Instagram. Just put my name, Cyril Diabate. Snake Team on Facebook as well. We have a couple of guys that are fighting all over Eastern Europe in M1 and Fight Night. We have another fighter who's fighting. He's going to be doing his third fight in Bellator in early December. He's got two first round finishes in Bellator, and he's doing his third fight. We have also Kevin Pecci, who's in the Risen Grand Prix bantamweight, who's fought his first fight in Risen a couple of weeks ago. He's going to be fighting on the 29th of December in Japan. So yeah, we've got a bunch of guys that are still under the radar, but future MMA superstars. And that's about it.
That's awesome, Cyril. Thank you so much for coming on the show to chat to me, bud, and I look forward to seeing you on my next trip to France.
Yeah, no worries. With pleasure.
Okay, my brother. You know, one of the things I first noticed about Cyril is his presence. You know, okay, the guy's huge. I think he's like 6'5" or something like that, but it's not necessarily his physical appearance that I'm referring to. It's something deeper than that. You know, when you're around the guy, you just sense that he's got this very crystallized male archetype, this like strong presence. And it's something I don't experience too often. And I think, you know, it's something that we're missing in society. A lot of us don't go through the rituals we require to crystallize as men, and we don't have those rites of passage. And I think Cyril really, he took it upon himself, whether he knows he was doing it or not, to use martial arts as his rites of passage. And, you know, he never won huge in the UFC, but he is the quintessential martial artist, in my opinion. And I really think it's a privilege for us to be able to hear his thoughts on MMA and martial arts and life. And I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. Next week, we're going to have my business partner, Dr. Mark Barton, another actualized man, another powerful martial artist and human being. And I think you guys are going to love that one too. So until next time, train hard. We'll be right back.